At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
O'Reilly. Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This isn't going to be at the speed of Orban or Modi or Erdogan, you know, who took sort of 5-10 years to really begin to change the system beyond recognition. This is at the speed of light.
Welcome, everyone, to the Mona Charon Show. I'm so glad you could join me. And today I am thrilled to welcome Ed Luce, who is a columnist for the Financial Times. Thank you for joining me, Ed. Good to see you.
It's great to see you too, Mona.
You have recently been writing on a number of topics that are of interest to me. One is Venezuela, another is China. And before we get into those, though, I wonder if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about yourself, how you came to be at the Financial Times, where you grew up, and so on. Tell us a little about you.
So I've been, in spite of my accent, I have been in the United States now for 20 years. Since 2006, but in fact, I was here also in 2000, 2001 as speechwriter to Larry Summers when he was Bill Clinton's Treasury Secretary, which was a sort of strange baptism of fire for a journalist coming from London, coming from the Financial Times and a foreigner, no less, of course. So I might sound like I've just arrived, but I'm sort of a de facto Washingtonian, I guess. And the Financial Times has been my employer for most of my career in journalism. It's a great global platform.
It sure is. Who owns the Financial Times?
We used to be owned by a British company called Pearson. And then in the same year, in fact, that the Graham family sold the Washington Post to Jeff Bezos, Pearson sold us to Nikkei, the Japanese newspaper group. So we are Japanese owned, and I should stress they are model proprietors. They do not interfere in any sense. So at an age of sort of angst about our profession and its viability, we're in really good shape.
You know, it's gotten to the point where with the decline of so many traditional news sources, I can count on one hand the newspapers that I still think are worth reading. And the Financial Times is on that list of just a few.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that. I mean, there are still some thriving publications out there. What really concerns me is the destruction of local media. I believe that there are roughly the same number of journalists employed in the United States as there were 15 years ago. It's just none of them are in, you know, Harrisburg and Sacramento. Well, not none, but a fraction. And the surplus has all gone to sort of the new startups, generally in New York and Washington, as some in LA, but there's been a redistribution. So it's not like journalism's dying, but I think journalism where it matters on the ground is perilously weak and thin.
And also the incentives, I believe, have changed because whereas journalism used to be supported by advertising and, you know, the editorials and the news side were kept in business by the sports section and the real estate ads and other things, furniture ads, new, you know, supermarket advertising, etc. Now, journalists who write for online publications are urged to get hits, their urge to get likes and repeats and retweets and et cetera. So the incentive to sensationalism and anger and riling people up is much more present than it used to be in journalism. And I think that's the root of many of our journalistic woes. Don't you agree?
I strongly agree. And I think the social media impact on journalism, but on politics, of course, and on society is even now still underestimated. And it's almost uniformly negative. I love the sort of idea of, you know, the benign proprietor who is shielded from those pressures. But benign proprietors are only benign for so long. They can only tolerate loss-making for so long. I mean, you can get a sort of serendipity, like the New York Times discovering that recipes and Sudoku and crosswords can cross-subsidize the journalism.
Yes.
Well, we've long since discovered that the Weekend Financial Times is something called How to Spend It, which is an attachment, you know, lots of luxury watches, high-end fashion, some yachts, some homes in Tuscany. does tend to be quite a nice subsidy for the newspaper.
So my husband opened it up that we didn't used to get the Financial Times in the print version, but now we do. So we used to just see it online and we didn't get that weekend insert. Now we do. And my husband said he saw that How to Spend It thing and he initially thought it was going to be, you know, goals for being frugal, you know, or how to make wise investments. He opens it up and it's, you know, Rolexes and luxury vacations. It's very funny.
Yeah, we're an expensive watch catalog with a newspaper attached. Actually, that is a joke. I don't want any of my colleagues to take that seriously.
It is, but the quality is absolutely fantastic. And honestly, people should consider it. It's not that expensive. You know, there are lots of other products out there that will set you back a whole lot more and give you a lot less. So recommend the Financial Times. So recently, you had occasion to write about Venezuela and it is in the news. We have seen this administration tell a series of tall tales about Venezuela, about Tren de Aragua, that this was an invading army, that justified the use of the 18th century Alien Enemies Act and so forth. But it goes beyond that. So tell us how you see the current sort of drive toward some kind of conflict with Venezuela. What is going on there?
So I think there's a couple of things. I mean, first, it is worth bearing in mind the context of this new national security strategy that's going to come out in the next week or two, I believe, but certainly in the near future. And then the national defense strategy that the Pentagon produces, and global forces posture. And, you know, these happen quadrennially with every, you know, administration. But we know through various leaks and reporting and through just simple observation that the great power competition that has framed the last few national security strategies is going to be downgraded in favor of Western hemispheric priority. And that includes the war on narco terrorists. That includes illegal immigration, the deportation of people from leftist regimes. It's that sort of kind of focus that we're gonna be getting, and that's I think attached directly this sort of Monroe Doctrine 2.0. I think the New York Post called it the Donroe Doctrine after Donald Trump. But that is, I think, directly linked to. I mean, grows straight out of Trump's domestic priorities, this idea there is an enemy within on America's streets, and that there is this sort of dystopian, war-ravaged, foreign gang-fueled violence on America's streets in its blue cities. And you have this sort of link between Tren de Aragua, the Venezuelan gang, and justifications for federalizing the National Guard, sending them into big cities. And I think that the two are sort of really umbilically linked in Stephen Miller's mind. You know, he's really the arch strategist of all of this. So this isn't really a foreign policy, still less a national defense or national security strategy, but it is the reality we're facing. And, you know, you just could not possibly justify in terms of drugs shipments and drug smuggling across the Caribbean. You could not possibly justify having what is now, I believe, 10,000 uniformed soldiers, Marines, naval officers in Venezuela's Caribbean backyard as an interdiction, as a drugs interdiction operation. It's overkill. Most of America's cocaine comes from Colombia, which is its largest supplier. Pretty much none of its fentanyl comes from Venezuela. And when earlier this year, the head of the National Intelligence Council was asked to produce a report on the Venezuelan strongman Nicolas Maduro's links to Trenda Aragua and fentanyl, etc., and the head of the NIC, Mike Collins, didn't produce that. The report just couldn't find evidence of that. He was fired by Tulsi Gabbard. So this is performative, but it's also potentially kinetic. I mean, you don't have that. You don't send destroyers and F-35 squadrons and nuclear subs into the neighborhood of a country with this kind of rhetoric and not at least risk accident. But I think, you know, it could be more kinetic than that.
Just to underscore, they are saying that they are fighting the so-called narco-terrorists. But you point out in your piece, and you just mentioned, that very few of the illegal drugs that come into the United States actually come from Venezuela. The cocaine comes from Colombia. The fentanyl comes from Mexico. So that part is false. The Trenda Aragua is not an army that reports to Nicolas Maduro that has invaded the United States. That's false. And on the basis of these falsehoods, the United States has undertaken piracy on the high seas. Worse than piracy, it's murder. I mean, our military is now simply blowing up boats that are claimed to be drug boats. They might be, but they've provided no evidence. And certainly, even if they were drug smuggling boats, we're not in the business of, you know, signing someone's death warrant for the crime of transporting drugs without a trial, without an opportunity for a defense, without finding out whether it was a case of mistaken identity, prosecutor, juror, executioner. And now it does look as if this administration maybe it's all bluff, and they're just simply trying to encourage Maduro's henchmen to take him out or something along those lines. But, you know, it does strike me, Ed, that this is a little bit at odds with the whole America First campaign promises of no more wars, right? I mean, do you think they may get a little bit of a problem with the base if this does become kinetic? You point out there's a huge military buildup down there. Well, cooler days call for layers that last. And Quince is my go-to for quality essentials that feel cozy, look refined, and won't blow your budget. I have been so delighted with my Quince acquisitions. So they have cashmere, which, who doesn't love cashmere? It is soft. It drapes beautifully. It's incredibly warm, yet not super heavy. Well, normally you expect to see, like for a nice cashmere sweater, you would see the price tag close to $200. It ranges, but that's how much they can cost. But no, at Quince, $50. I have a new Mongolian cashmere sweater that I have been pulling down off the shelf happily now that with the cooler weather. And I know that I am going to be wearing this all winter long, incredibly happily. I also love their silk shirts that are classic. It's very hard to find classic clothes that are just, they're going to go with everything. But like, I have a nice cream silk shirt that I got from Quince, which you can wear like as a layering thing under a jacket or just by itself with jeans. Incredibly easy to care for. And also, this company sends you a little note about how to take care of your clothes, which is so nice. I mean, for example, I used to think that you had to dry clean your cashmere, but according to Quince, they sent you a little note along with the sweater saying you don't, it's actually not a great idea to dry clean and that you should wash it in cold water. And they give you instructions about how to take care of it and not to over clean it and what's best for keeping this sweater looking and feeling its best for years to come. So you not only get a great price, but you get a sense that, you know, this is something that's going to last and that the company cares about it, stands behind it, wants to give value for money. So I really am impressed. I've gotten compliments on the clothes. I've sent people to Quince. So now I'm sending my listeners. It turns out that Quince partners directly with top-tier ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, allowing them to deliver luxury quality pieces at half the price of similar brands. It is the kind of wardrobe upgrade that feels smart, stylish, and effortless. Find your fall staples at Quince.com. Go to Quince.com/Mona for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. It's now available in Canada, too. That's Quince, Quince.com/Mona to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/Mona. And we thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
There is. It's not nearly sufficient to actually mount a land invasion. But it's, of course, way overdone if it's just a drugs, anti-drugs operation, as well as being illegal, not authorized, and, as you say, judge, jury, and executioner. So I think this is chiefly performative in Trump's mind. And these televised sort of vaporizing of these boats, you know, we don't know who's on those boats. Trump claims, and Hegseth, the defense secretary, secretary of war, I'm sorry, war. Claims, you know, that there's cocaine all over the ocean and fentanyl all over the ocean. I mean, I think this is pure fiction. And if it weren't, I think they would have provided some evidence for it. Other countries, some Caribbean countries in Colombia, have said that nationals have been amongst those vaporized, amongst those killed fishermen. There's not going to be any sort of inquiry, I don't think, into this, because Trump as he's doing across the board in so many areas, is saying, so make me. And like, who's going to force me to do what you say I should be doing? And nobody is. And the Republican Party on the Hill is the sort of one force in this system at this point that could actually force him. And I don't think it's going to. There's very few signs of that. And courts tend to show a lot more forbearance to stuff where national security is stamped on it, even if it's sort of kabuki. And I do think this is chiefly kabuki. But I also think that the Secretary of State and National Security Advisor, Marco Rubio, has, I think, much more of a sort of regime change mission. And it's not as if, you know, Venezuela is run by a charming man. This is a brutal regime.
Terrible regime. Mm-hmm.
It's a sort of ally, not a formal one, but it's very much a sort of operating alongside Russia and China. It's close to them. It does a lot of arms trade with them. It's also close to Iran, interestingly. So this is not a savory regime, don't get me wrong. I think you're absolutely right that if this really did, if some accident happens, and so much of events are driven by accident and the capriciousness of leaders taking decisions in the context of accidents, that if you've got Rubio really sort of driving this argument that this is a threat. This regime fuels the war, the enemy within, that is that is promoting terrorism and anti-national activity on America's streets, and it suits the moment, then he's all dressed up. It's there. I mean, you have the sort of kinetic, you have the firepower in the region. You have crack teams of sort of elite units in the region, in Puerto Rico and elsewhere. And you've got, you know, you've got a regime that is very, very nervous, that is it's activated the citizens and militias as well as the conventional military. So I don't think the base would enjoy this if this turned into a real war. I don't think the markets would enjoy it either. That's what he's risking. I'm not sure that's explicitly Trump's intention yet, but that's certainly we're very, very close to some kind of conflict. And of course, there has been a presidential finding, meaning authorization for the CIA, well, order for the CIA to conduct covert activity, which can mean any number of things, up to and including assassination attempts.
Is it normal for an administration to announce publicly that it has ordered the CIA to engage in covert action?
Again, there's this performative element. I mean, the idea that you're going to get the people of Venezuela emboldened to overthrow Maduro, you know, I think is part of the thinking, and I think that's part of what Rubio would like to bring about. But that can work both ways. That can boomerang. The notion of Yankee imperialism is a very strong one.
I think we've tried that.
there's a little bit of a patchy record. I say that coming from a country that has quite a lot of imperialist records. Generally, even when regimes are unpopular, a big imperialist intervention strengthens them.
Yes, yes, exactly. Well, this should be fun. By the way, it's also the case that the president is supposed to ask for an authorization for the use of military force or a declaration of war from, I remember the what's it called again? Right, Congress.
Congress or the Duma.
Steve Bannon calls it. Yes. Very appropriate. God. Yeah. I mean, you would think he was being ironic, but wow. It's on the nose.
A facility for saying the quiet part out loud in quite sort of vivid terms. I'll give him credit for that.
Now, the administration has also been so one of the characteristic qualities of this administration is that, you know, you talked about there's going to be a finding that the Department of Defense is going to have a long range plan and all of these things that are sort of normal activities of government and part of what the foreign policy establishment typically did. You're an expert in all this. You wrote a book about Zbigniew Brzezinski. But of course, all of those things have a little bit of a feel of the Roman Senate, you know, after the Caesars have taken control. You know, they still meet. These organizations still put out their reports. They still take votes, but they have no power. And it's all about Trump's whims and what he decides on any given morning he's going to do. Today, Ukraine has no cards and deserves rebuke and disrespect from the president and the vice president. Tomorrow, Ukraine may be able to win the war. And it is just mind-boggling that we are now in an era where it's the emperor's moods that govern the foreign policy of a great, formerly great nation.
It's interesting. I was asked to write a long essay, a reported essay, not a column, which is great for, as economists, it's really good when you're sort of getting out there and talking to people, on Trump's first year dating from November the 5th, because the transition was so unusual and the era changed back last year on November the 5th, not dating from January the 20th. So this is coming out over this weekend, and it's the weekend after he covers story. And I talked to lots and lots of people in all walks of life, retired generals, chief executives, lobbyists, people in law firms, partners in law firms, people on Capitol Hill, and elsewhere, to just try and gauge the degree to which and the speed with which things have changed under this sort of what I call the Trump supremacy, which you're absolutely right, that has that sort of Caligulan crooked finger, but if the wind changes, he'll crook the finger the other way. And it's an extraordinary, whimsical, capricious, completely sort of nihilistic way of governing that is entirely about him. It's but what really struck me about researching this piece and then getting people on the record was how many people who would ordinarily have been on the record just did not want to take the risk. So it felt at times like I was reporting on Erdogan in Turkey, or that I was reporting on Putin in Russia. There is an intimidation, there's a sort of fear effect that he's had that has rippled through the private sector. They don't want to hire. None of Jack Smith's, the people who worked for him, have found a job. These are experienced lawyers. But tons of Biden alumni have not found jobs. There was one who did, Lisa Monaco, as Biden's deputy attorney general, and Trump publicly called on Microsoft that hired her to get rid of her. And they haven't, to their credit, but I mean, I guess they'll be sort of weighing what that will cost them. And the chilling effect, the ripple effect on other employers is huge. But you see the list of donors to this ballroom?
Oh, I have it right here. I'm going to do a little show and tell. It starts on this page here at the bottom. Now if you can see that. And wait, it goes on. There you go. And included on this list are Amazon, Apple, Booz Allen Hamilton, Coinbase, Comcast, T-Mobile, Palantir, could go on.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
And this is protection racket money. It's nothing more. And this is kind of a mob system.
By the way, we didn't say these were the donors to this ballroom,
yes,
which is the desecration of the White House that Trump is perpetrating.
And I think that's, you know, I mean, that's one particularly egregious and, of course, irresistibly symbolic story because of the demolition of the East Wing, which he promised would never happen. So the vandalism is you know, it's irresistible in terms of the visuals of like standing as a symbol of what's going on. In terms of me trying to get people on the record and them explaining for quite understandable reasons, you know, if you're president of a university, well, you might think this, but do you really want to jeopardize all your scholars, all your research labs, access to federal funding? If you're a retired general, you can be reenlisted, you know, overnight and cashiered or court-martialed. So that's a sort of very, very serious risk. If you're CEO of a Fortune 500 company, you've got other people, your employees to think about. So I understand in individual cases, each of them, why they're afraid to speak out. But I'm just stunned that we got to that point
so fast.
And that's, you know, that's a very, very severe warning, sort of flashing red warning light that this isn't going to be at the speed of Orban or Modi or Erdogan, you know, who took sort of 5-10 years to really begin to change the system beyond recognition. This is at the speed of light. This is what differentiates Trump from the others and from his first term. There's nobody stopping him this time. The adults are the ones on his enemies list. The adults are the ones he's investigating and indicting. And so not only are they not within the administration, sort of cautioning, blocking, muffling, you know, watering down or just changing the subject to get him to not take a crazy decision. He's actually hunting them down to punish them for having crossed him.
And to encourage the others, as Voltaire would have said. While we're on this theme, the fact is that the president has also signaled that he is ready when the time comes to invoke the Insurrection Act, which is a loaded gun that was left on the president's desk by previous Congresses, does really allow him tremendous latitude to use the military domestically, which without the Insurrection Act is more problematic as a matter of law, though he's been violating it. But I guess now we are looking at, so he's attempting to gerrymander his way to a midterm victory. A few years ago, if you had said that Trump would attempt to rig the 2026 election results by stationing the military in voting precincts where he, you know, wants to intimidate voters, people would have accused you of Trump derangement syndrome, et cetera. Right now, it is looking more likely than not that we will see that scenario in 2026.
It's funny, one of the people who did sort of very robustly speak to me on the record for the piece I was describing is Senator Mark Warner of Virginia. As you know, he's a centrist Democrat.
Yes.
He's not on the Ilhan Omar wing of the Democratic Party.
That's right.
And therefore, he doesn't raise his voice. He doesn't say alarmist things. That's not what we're used to from him. And therefore, his anger and concern is much more forceful than, you know, from people you expect it from. And I think he's very typical. You know, Chris Coons is similar, deeply angry. And he said, Senator Warner said to me in spring, in sort of April, May, people were saying to me, we cannot, we now fear there are not going to be free and fair elections in 2026 or 2028. And he said, I just sort of dismissed that because now I take it very, very seriously. That's just, you know, that's just 5 months later. Therefore we should take it very, very seriously because Mark Warner is, he's not one of these people who profits from, you know, maximizing engagement through shock value.
Exactly. That's not the opposite.
That's not his brand. That's not his psychology as a senator. He is saying this because, and I think he's, you know, he's a cool head, but he's a cool head that's getting extremely worried. I take him very, very seriously. Now, I mean, Trump, you know, in that sort of imperial mode that sort of whimsical mode that you described, calls Greg Abbott and calls on Greg Abbott of Texas to produce another five districts and then other governors of other Republican states to do the same. It's like picking up a telephone and ordering room service. I'll have five more districts, please. I mean, and that's it. Is that how this works? What can be done to stop it? I know everybody's having these conversations, but the speed with which he's doing this and the fact that so many norms across so many fronts are being broken shows that's the theory of the case. It's not just a whimsical emperor. This is a thought through strategy to get it done. The quicker you do it, the more you overwhelm opposition. Then after that, it becomes easy. And I think that's the Rust vote. I think that's the Stephen Miller approach. So I think there is a plan that beyond just this capricious emperor.
So one thinks of, was it Bismarck who said that God protects drunks, fools, and the United States of America? And certainly we have our share of fools. So I would just say this, the guardrails are obviously not holding, but sometimes luck can intervene. So, for example, these five districts that Abbott and the Republicans in Texas are making out of whole cloth or redesigning are heavily Hispanic, and they are banking on the Hispanic vote continuing to move toward the GOP. But that may be a vain hope. Hispanic support for Trump personally has plummeted since the election of 2024. And if prices don't come down and the economy doesn't improve in 2026, they may find that those districts don't actually deliver for them. So we can't lose sight of the fact that that we can have other, you know, even if it doesn't go the way it ought to, namely that you know, Americans of all stripes should resist this authoritarian takeover. There are other things that can militate in our favor.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
Yeah, I've been asking people, I've yet actually to get a good answer. What is the best book, the best study on that period immediately before Joseph Welch says at long last, have you no decency, to Senator Joe McCarthy? And why it was that moment, you know, years into McCarthyism, 3 years into it, why it was only then that somehow this straw broke the camel's back. I guess one of the analogies that sort of occurred to some of the people I've spoken to is, look, communism and the sort of idea that there might have been a fifth column in the United States of the Red Menace, you know, was not a complete figment of the imagination. There was legitimate public concern about about Stalinism spreading. It's not like the international environment was calm. The Iron Curtain was there, and the Soviet Union was a revolutionary power.
And there were communists in the U.S. who were working for Stalin.
And there were communists, and there were actual real communists. Well, I mean, illegal immigration is not a figment of the imagination. There are plenty of Democrats who agree that Biden really went too far and just lost the sort of plot in terms of the border being open for so long, and was very belated in taking remedial action, by which stage the political damage was just pretty much irreversible. So there is a sort of, and you know, you look at countries like Britain, which have got essentially social democratic governments, struggling to contain and reduce immigration. It's a not unreasonable fear that at times, particularly when there's jobs problem and incomes problems, that if you've got particularly large inflows of people, there's going to be social trouble. It's going to be a sort of zero-sum game, and that will produce reaction and populism. You know, the theory of doing something about this and closing the border is not unreasonable, but the extent to which he's gone is Joe McCarthyite. This has got to produce, and I think we do see evidence of it. And I know that when we look on social media, 15 years ago, you knew in theory that, and sometimes in practice, there are a lot of nasty people out there, but they're not most people. If you go onto Twitter, you start thinking, because you can see them now, and they're baring their head for you to see, you can start believing that that is the majority of people. I don't think it is the majority of people. Just anecdotally, in my interaction with Americans, I think that this kind of masked men picking up mothers who are dropping off their kids at school, and having these shows of force parades through playgrounds, the checkpoints, you know, there's checkpoints around here, you know, on some of the Rock Creek. I've driven past two or three. They're clearly racially profiling. This is not most people's sense of what is fair or reasonable. And people know people who are really scared about this quite legitimately. So I share your faith that Hispanics, you know, cannot be counted on. I mean, last year was a very, very different time yes. to this year, precisely because of everything that's happened that we've been talking about.
That is a fairly optimistic note on which to leave things. So, Ed Luce, thank you so much for joining me today, and I hope we can have you back.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.